Spectacular Diagnostics.
Hello and welcome back to another podcast interview. I am over the moon to be joined by James Knox, soon to be of Picnic Post NL. James, delighted to have you back on. How are you?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Getting back into the swing of training. I think I'm on about my fifth ride in after a bit of a holiday and a break. So, yeah, building back up again.
How's the first ride been? Awful.
Not awful, actually. To be honest, quite okay. I mean, steady away. I haven't done anything more than like 2 hours 40. So just baby steps for the time being. New bike, new shoes, getting all used to all of that. So taking my time.
What is the picnic bike? What are you on?
They're on a Lapierre.
All right, okay. Any good?
Yeah, seems quite good. First impressions are fine. I mean, to be honest, yeah. Settle into it quite okay, so no issues.
Nice. Okay, so you're coming to the end of a long time at Quickstep, 8 years.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a little walk down memory lane to begin with, and you've been doing your homework for me. I mean, quickly go back. I remember 2017, Tour de l'Avenir. I think it was one of the first times it was ever broadcast on Eurosport, if I'm right. I'm sure it's the first time I can remember seeing it. And I remember seeing you, I think it was the day you were second, and a certain Egan Bernal did you that day. It was looking back at that top 10, it's quite the it's kind of quite the who's who. Bernal obviously catches the eye, but there was a couple other decent guys in there, and then you make the move to Quickstep. So what I've asked you to do is I've asked you to give me your top five races from your 8 years at Quickstep.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So in chronological order, in what order, what are we going for?
Could you do, let's just do chronological, that's easier.
Okay, so the first one I've got on here is San Sebastian 2018, which for like, I mean, most of these are kind of like my personal view of everything, of course.
Yeah.
So there's obviously different successes in there, but that was the first race for me where I felt like I was at a level to be with the big boys. I know, because obviously, first part of my first year, to be honest, I took nothing more than really just getting a kick in. I was okay at like Tour of Norway, but everything up to Dauphiné was just too hard. So, bit of a rest after that. Second part of the season, I came out quite a lot better. And then at San Sebastian, I was top 20. Julian won, which is obviously the big bonus thing, you know, been part of a big team win there. And just that, yeah, I won't forget that feeling of, you know, fuck, I'm sort of looking who's ahead of me. It's only quality riders. I'm sneaking around in a top 20 in a World Tour one-day race. That was pretty, felt like for the first time I belong here. I've deserved my place a little bit. You know, this is what it's all about, innit?
I remember watching him. I think it was just before he maybe went on the final climb. I think he rode down the group and was just having a chat. And you're like, my God, he's on good. He's good this day.
Well, in classic Julian style, I mean, because this is a bit of a something he's famous all throughout the years. He'd obviously been flying at the tour. Was the year he won the polka dot, wasn't it? So his year he won the polka dot, he'd been living it up off the back of the tour. I think he'd been at Criteriums. It was a last minute get into San Sebastian. All he did was talk himself down for 2 days. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I can't do it. In the race, I'm tired. Oh, I haven't got it today. I can't do it. And then, yeah. Let rip on the final climb, flying, and what I think he went with Mollema, didn't he? They were those two in Bauke Mollema and Julian. They were in two.
Yeah, two up sprint.
Beat him in the sprint. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just a bit of a he's a showman on and off the bike, to be honest. So that was kind of quintessential Julian.
Right, okay, set number two.
I'm just going to check chronological. I put the stage 17. I think it's stage 17, Vuelta, the crosswind day.
Oh,
So that's number two.
See, I marked my kind of notes for this as well, which races I wanted to mention, and this is definitely at stage 17 to Guadalajara, I think it was. Or...
Guadalajara, yeah. What was it like? Aranda de Duero to Guadalajara, I think that's the, yeah.
And it was big crosswinds, and
yeah,
you boys were lined up behind the team car. Oh,
Yeah, it was just
the front car.
yeah. To be honest, I was like one of the, I think I was like basically second wheel as it went off the car, just shitting myself, not because I thought I was going to do anything, but just nervous. I remember even before the start, just being terrified. I was like, you know, we got these little caffeine chewing gums for Quick Steps. I was just chomping on them, terrified, trying to get revved up. And then, yeah, that was it, just straight into the gutter off the car because it was already like blowing a gale and it was like crosstail, big crosstail. And it just, yeah, it was just in split straight off. I don't even really, can't really remember how big the group was to start because I can't kind of think we were all mostly in front turning, but there must have been like a bit of a tail and dregs of a group. But I think, you know, we were quickly down to like 40 guys within like a handful of K really. And then from there, that 40 guy just got whittled down more and more. But it was just hours of this, hours of just chopping as hard as we could. So yeah, it was, that was, looking back, that was really, we had eight guys in the front. And yeah, it was just hell for leather, really. And there's some big boys in there doing some. He was the standouts were like Tim de Klerk and Cavagna from us, and what was what they called? Portuguese Oliveira, and what's the famous movie star domestic Valverde's man? Forgotten his name.
Rojas.
No. He was there, but the big unit. Terrible that I've forgotten his name.
Quickly going to look at the
He's now
results.
DS. He's now DS.
Erviti.
Aviti, yeah, Aviti doing some monster turns as well. So we were just, it was just like all day, wasn't it? 50, 55K an hour.
And by the time they finished, the group was down about 20 guys, I think it was. And
Yeah.
then, so Bennett, I remember, well, Bennett was there. I remember seeing Fabio get dropped on what looked
Yep.
like not much of a climb, but obviously it was. And then
Yeah.
Bennett was still favourite to win the sprint, and Stibar went long, and then Bennett's chased
Yeah.
him, and then Phil Gill just does what Phil Gill does.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because in the end, like, I think Sam probably could have won, to be honest, but it just got a lot, even for how hard the day was. It was like, yeah, Stevie made a move, maybe like K to go. And then I think something random like Milano chased him down from memory. And then turning the last corner was like long, but it still kicked up a bit. And I think Bennett launched maybe like 400 to go, which was already like we'd already been going hard, and that was early. And then Phil had time to sort of get onto his wheel, let him burn out a little bit, and come over the top of him. But we had Phil first, Remy third, Tim was seventh, I was 10th. I think I was 10th. Yeah, I think we were
You're
four in the
up
top
10,
10, and
yeah.
we still had, yeah. So we were, and we all had seven of us in the front group. So it was a pretty, that was, yeah. I mean, I remember that was like something else, really. Even like the whole night, we were just sort of, I think we got, we're, you know, we're all bottles of wine at the table. Everyone was merry. It was a bit of a, yeah, bit
And
of a highlight.
some genius previewer, I think, predicted it from start to finish.
Oh, yeah. Did you
Yeah.
get that one?
Yeah.
On the money.
On the money, cross one stage. On the money.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. And it's still
And
the Ribon Jaune. Isn't it?
you went, I think I just double checked there, it was 5 minutes 30-ish you took on. It was Roglic, I think, was in the lead. So the red jersey group, and I think that pinged you up to eighth, I think it was.
Yeah, that sounds right. Eighth, I think I must have jumped up to like 8 or 9th because I'd already taken a bit of time before the rest day. That was after the rest day, and I was, yeah, I must have taken 5 minutes one day, 5, 6 minutes the next day. Two or three lads that were around me in the GC just got shafted for 25 minutes. So suddenly it was like PDL. It's, you know, first Grand Tour coming towards the finish of my first Grand Tour, and I'm in eighth overall. So I was really on cloud nine. I was floating around. Couldn't believe it.
And then the crash came.
Oh yeah, that was the next day. Yeah, there was a lot of memorable days in this world for me. So that next day, was it next day or was it 2 days later? I can't remember. But anyway, to Toledo. Crash then. Managed to get back in. A bit battered and bruised. Yeah, that must have been 19, I think, stage 19. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had the horrendous stage 20 where dropped pretty early on, battered and bruised.
Yeah, I was just empty as well, to be honest.
Gilbert and Stibar pull you
That's right.
around the whole day,
Dragging me around.
and you miss out in top 10 by 21 seconds.
Yeah, which I didn't even, care about at the time. I remember thinking at the time, like, fuck it, 9th or 11th, it doesn't matter. But I mean, it haunts me a little bit now because, you know, it would have been pretty nice. But I was just going nowhere that day and just, I was basically just crying to get to the line, to be honest. It was pretty, I was just running on empty, running on fumes.
Mikel Nieve slipped into 10th place.
Yeah, Soler as well. Soler and Yeovil, they rolled me.
Okay,
Don't
number
forget
three.
that. I'm going to just check. Okay, number three, I've got. Don't know if you would have picked this one. You might have better ones, but I've picked stage 20 of the 2020 Giro.
See, I was wondering if you're going to pick 2020 Giro because
Yeah.
you were bloody good.
Yeah. I mean, there was obviously other ones. There was obviously other ones to pick, but in just in terms of like what it was and like the culmination of the 3 weeks, I picked that day. I mean, we as a team we had some very memorable days. As an individual, I had some good days as well. But that day was going very well. But I think it was just a bit of like the whole team. I think it was a bit of a like a reward for the whole team that day. You know, we hadn't managed to sort of pull off the pink, but the way we rode for 3 weeks there is like still like, you know, back up and off that Vuelta 19. That was as well. To be honest, it was an equally as enjoyable Grand Tour to be part of as a team. Wasn't really something that I was like. I don't think any of us were, you know. So unexpected, but then we sort of mentally sort of all driven on by the pink jersey, I guess.
Yeah, it was
And Joao was obviously flying.
Almeida, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In stage 20, that was the day. Was that the day Rowan Dennis
They
pulverized
killed us again,
everybody?
in fairness. Yeah. Dennis detonated it again. We did they had to change the day. This is something you probably won't remember, but it was like end of the year COVID. And the actual stage we were supposed to do was outrageous. We were supposed to do something like called it. We were supposed to do something into France, and then the Col d'Izoard come down the Col d'Izoard, Col d'Agnello, something else. I think something else, or maybe I've got them in the. I might have this in the wrong order. Maybe it was something like Agnello, Izoard, Mont-Genève, and then up Sestriere to finish. But because of COVID border rules, in the end they changed it. So we'd already striked one stage, and then we got lucky here because it was also not so bad. And then we just did up to Sestriere, and then we did like two laps of that. You can sort of come down and take a little valley road and then climb back up to Sestriere. So we did that twice. And already the first time Dennis just rode everyone off the wheel with Teo and Jai. And then we were behind, we had three guys in the breakaway ahead, which was already like as a team, we were having a pretty good day out. And then last lap, we were chasing behind. We caught all three of our guys who contributed, Ballerini, Seri. Who would have been the other one? Or was it just two? Can't remember. And then anyway, continued to pull and, you know, sort of get João back across the line.
Masnada.
So it was just, yeah. Masnada. I think actually that day wasn't there, possibly, but he'd been exceptional for the whole rest of the race anyway. Don't think he survived in that group. But yeah, it was just a, don't know, a bit of a culmination as well. I remember just thinking like we're all, I don't know. I think we were all just sort of like so happy for it to be over and the way we'd ridden all 3 weeks. That was a sort of the ambience and the atmosphere there was fantastic.
Okay, number four.
Number four, again, I'm gonna have to check. Liège 21, I've put.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I missed that one. I forgot about that one. That was the when you launched it up Rochefoucauld, was it not?
Yeah, that was I mean personally, you know, that feels like a big one that sort of if that had been a win, that would have been like probably just about my most enjoyable victory as a teammate. But yeah, we had Julian, we had the whole team riding well. We had Maori there who was covering moves from the Col de la Forge. That sort of what he was covering sort of came back together. And then it was like me, Maori, João, Julian left in a group to take on Rochefoucauld. And then, yeah, I sort of did the little positioning and start of Rochefoucauld. And Julian went with, or who did he go with? It was Pogacar. Who else was there? Was it Godu? Godu was there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was in that little elite group that year. There was someone else. I think they were in four, weren't they? So I can't remember who else was there. Oh,
Valverde
Hirschi.
and Woods.
Woods. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, and then Julian obviously got rolled in the sprint by Pogacar fair and square. but he kind of left the door open for him a little bit. That's the only thing I remember. But yeah, that was just a really memorable day. You know, like there's something, it's hard to explain about like monument level racing. Monument racing in terms of like how long it is and the sort of that feeling of like it's you're 5.5 hours deep into the race and you're sort of there with the, you know, it's always the best of the best, isn't it? It's kind of like you can never fluke that really. So that, you know, that personally for me stands out of like, right, I was there in the sort of finale of a monument. That's, you know, pretty amazing feeling.
Being the guy who's launching it as well,
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
you're not just hanging at the back, like
Yeah, yeah.
you're the one that's driving it up Rochefort, going for Alaphilippe to attack over the top. So, yeah, good one. Right, last one then, number five.
And then I've put last day of Basque 23.
Oh, second place in Eibar.
Yeah, but that was just, it was also just, we had a like bizarrely fun week as well. Like, I think almost every day, sort of almost every day we're on the podium. We didn't get a win, but it was, yeah, I just come from Coppi Bartali with Mauro and he'd won there. And we were already riding well as a team, to be honest. I think Cavagna won a stage. And then we went to Basque. Can't remember if Remy was still there in Basque. But anyway, Mauro, Bajoli, Dries, Cataneo, myself. And it was just I don't know, we were just getting really stuck in every day and riding really well. And we kind of just missed out on a couple of chances to win, really. But yeah, even that last day, I kind of looked back because I had such a nice relationship with the guys who we were racing with. And I wouldn't have been second if Mauro hadn't been. First, he was up the road. I don't know if you remember. First, he was up the road. Then we came back to him, but he held in over Arrate. He basically came back to our group down the other side of Arrate. And then when I launch, he's basically covering moves and sort of nullifying the group behind, which helps me stay away for like was probably best individual result of my career. So like, there's so many like nice moments for me as well, beyond just my own performance. But yeah, that was and I was really like over the moon, sort of like. Bit emotional off the finish line because there's been, you know, not had a pro win, but I remember feeling like this is basically a win, you know, this is reigning. Was he would he been reigning Tour champ? No, second in the tour the year before, I guess, but as big as it gets for me to be behind someone like that.
And you were on the podium as well for a large
Yes,
part
yeah.
of the final 5K, because I remember it was really tight on GC away from Vingegaard, and they let the gap go, and at one point you
Yeah.
definitely were on the podium,
Yeah. I
and then I can't
weirdly, I don't
remember who
remember even
chased.
thinking or even being aware of that. I was just, yeah. I don't even think image because I think I've watched it back that night, and I don't even think there's images of who you see chasing. But like, obviously, Brian Smith was all over it. I think I must have got up to like 10 seconds on the group behind, and with the bonus seconds, I was just about. I think I was going to be podium. That's right. I was going to be third, wasn't I? And then I think even. Izagirre, him getting the bonus seconds on the line, that put him into third. So it was a pretty, there must have been like four or five of us all around at the same time, really. But yeah, I was moving well that Basque. That was me going really at my best ever level, sort of thing.
You normally are moving well at Basque.
I've had some good years, I've had some bad years there. It's not an easy, right? If you're going well, you can get stuck in. If you're not going well, yeah, there's nowhere to hide, really. So it's good fun, good racing.
The ones I've noted down that you've no mentioned,
Yeah.
2018 Tour of Turkey,
Oh yeah. Yeah.
fourth.
Yeah. Fourth,
Remember at the
beaten
time
by.
you were disappointed. You thought you could have won that one.
Yeah. I was maybe getting a bit big for my boots there, but I remember I really that day I was, you know, sort of no fear first year. I remember thinking like I was disappointed because it was headwind on the climb, and I remember thinking if it was tailwind and somewhere to go, I could be making moves. But I was really moving that day. Who
Lutsenko,
was it? It
I
was
think.
Lutsenko, yeah.
Ulisse.
Prades. And who was the
Prades.
other? Who was the other? There was someone else who rolled me. Who else was ahead?
No, it'd have been
Oh,
Ulisse.
Ulisse. Yeah, Ulisse. Yeah, yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
I've got, weirdly, and I don't know why I've got it, but it sticks in my head. The Jebel, was it the Jebel Hafit stage when you were in
Oh, yeah.
the breakaway?
Yeah, there was so back on, yeah. So 2019, I did a good ride. That was one of my sort of premier good rides, normal Jebel Hafit. Yeah. And then 2020, I'd actually forgot when I was going through the results. I completely forgot about that one. 2020, we did before the whole race got stopped with COVID. We did a Jebel Hafit stage two, and then we did it again like stage five. And the first time it was too hot, and I just completely parked it at the bottom of the climb. cooked. And then 3 days later, we were sat around and we did our DS meeting, and it was just like, well, everyone's going to go for the breakaway today, aren't they? Because only like a handful of guys are anywhere in GC. It's kind of big open roads. You can sort of pick and choose who lets go up the road. There's going to be for sure 15 motivated guys, strong move to get in. So from kilometer zero, first move straight in it, turned around. That was it. Five of us up the road all day. Long fucking splash around desert road for 80K. What was it? Something like 50K that way, 100K that way, 20K to the climb. It was me, Tosh van der Sander, who kept us motivated, kept us moving. He was basically organizing everything for us. And then there was Larry Warbass, and there was a couple of Italian Pro Conti lads, I think. So five of us, yeah. But it was a lot. It was fucking a long day. And then we got to the bottom of the climb, and they kind of just like crushed us as well. It was sort of like every time they wanted to accelerate, we'd be like 6 minutes ahead, and then we'd be like a minute and a half ahead. So we came into the bottom of the climb with not much of an advantage in the end. And I remember thinking, fuck it, for sure we're going to get caught. So as soon as we just hit the first steep ramp, I just hit them and just thought, well, it was basically a bit of a TV attack. I'll hit them from the bottom. I know I'm not going to make it to the top. And then I was actually going okay, but I don't think they were, because the GC was kind of like set up a little bit. It wasn't the sort of full fireworks like the first, like the normal Gibella feat, sort of the way they do it just as hard as they can from the bottom. And yeah, I think I got to like
4K,
three-ish K.
3K, yeah.
Yeah, 4, 3K to go. Yeah, something like that. And also, in my head, the thing is, I knew the climb and I knew something from like 3K to go, you arrive on the flat section. So I went from thinking this is a no-hoper to like, fuck me, if I can get past 4 to 3K to go to this flat section, if they come across to me there, I've got a little bit of a breather, a bit of a sit on the wheel and a last sort of last little steep ramp, and then the downhill, you never know, I can sort of hang on to something special. But yeah, they caught and passed me pretty quickly, as they do obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good ride, I remember that.
I've got second at the Nationals in 23.
Yeah, that, I mean, probably that one should have been on there. That was pretty hard to leave off, to be honest. But it's kind of the only reason I left it off is because, like everything else, I felt like I had a nice story with the team and stuff. But Nationals was obviously, I mean, it was memorable for me for other reasons. It was like mum and dad drove me over Sunday morning. So we drove from, my family home in Levens, Kendal, to, where is it? What's it called?
Salt bump,
I've
isn't it?
forgotten the name. Saltburn, exactly. And 2 hours in the car Sunday morning, not even that early start, to be honest. Got there. They were my Swannies for the day. So they were, they had little quick step jackets, basically stood by the road handing up bottles. I prepared all our bottles together, feeds. We've been practicing little Musette hand ups with my dad. I wasn't even used as well to take things on the left hand side again. We do everything on the right hand side in Europe. So UK have to take everything on the left. So we've been pissing around outside the house doing Musette hand ups and all these little things. And then, yeah, and then the race obviously went amazingly. I knew I was flying because I did a Club 10 on Wednesday with my local club. And I was honestly flying around this Club
Oh,
10.
those
I just
guys would
turned.
have been raging with you turning up and
Yeah.
smashing it.
No, to be fair, they always treat me really good, but it's not a big club. There was only like, even on that night, there must have only been like 10 or 12 people, but obviously they're all on TT bikes. And I turned up just to be polite and say hello. I wasn't thinking I'd do anything. So I was in like cotton socks, normal lid, shorts and jersey. So about as unaero as you could be. But from 30 seconds into this effort, I just knew I was just motoring. So fully committed, went as hard as I could. And it's a proper rolling sport in Club 10. It's like not flat. We have the Levens 10, which is pan flat where I live. But the sort of most of the club stuff they do at this Millthorpe 10, which is tricky. Honestly, A6, few little rollers, and I was just on the hook sprinting over these rollers. I was flying, I was motoring. Still to this day, it's like the best 20 minute power tech. Like 20 minute power is that Club 10 forever. That's my best ever.
And
So,
your normal socks.
in my normal cotton socks, and I did something like a 20 minute, 20, 30. I had the shallows in as well. If I had the deeps and a skin suit, I would have been like nine. I think I would have been sub 20, which would have been something. But
And
yeah,
then
so then I
you.
did that, and then I was like, fuck me, Sunday, I'm on. I'm massively on. I just need to get into the race clean, and see what I've got. And yeah, I was going good.
And you and your pal Stevie Williams.
Yeah, but we couldn't
Can you?
roll thread over. But we had a bit of a, yeah. First, I had Mark Donovan, really good mate, up the road, so I was giving it the big one, not chasing down Mark and second sitting in here, see what goes. And then me and Stevie got away with Fred, and then Fred put us away, both of us, pretty easily. But anyway, yeah, that was really good fun. And then hopped in the car, and we were home. You know, drove back together, mum, dad, and my brother drove over as well. So everyone was there. It was like, yeah, don't get that very often, and put on a show for them as well, so they were pretty happy.
The other one I've got purely for sadistic reasons because it wasn't a good memory for you. The nighttime TTT
Oh
in
yeah.
Delta,
Oh yeah.
where
That's a good.
you punctured after like what,
Yeah.
1K, 2K, something like that.
Yeah. I didn't even make it to 1K into the race.
Then you had to
Because
ride in the dark by yourself, people crossing the roads.
I was telling this story only a couple of days. In fact, we got down the rabbit hole randomly on a ride, a few of the lads, of just how, like, what a bizarre mess some of these Vuelta TTTs have been. First, I was telling the story that we were like riding off a, like, that huge salt pile in the Torre Viejo one in 2019. And then there was the whole roundabout incident and the Jumbo Visma car on the side of the road. And then obviously we're talking about the Figueras, this one this year, which was chaotic with people in the road and tricky corners and everything. And then there was, yeah, 2023, the last two, three teams that started, it was just black. It was honestly just the sun had set. It was just, and it was a dark, stormy night as well. So it was really, it just rolled in, and it was just, and it was pissing it down. And it was so chaotic. I've never heard this before, but our plan was only four guys would pull. Eight-man team, so we had four guys turning. So it would have been Remco, I think Remco, Bagioli, Cataneo must have been there. And I don't even remember who the fourth one would have been. And then it was like the four rest of us who weren't good enough, it was just, you get out of the way, you're going to stay at the back, and you're just going to hold on because you don't want to, we're not going to slow the boys down. And if you basically mess up a corner, and also like from front to back, it's too long. So just keep them in the front. And that was like me, Seri, Jan Hurt, and Louis Vavaka, poor lad, was sweeper. So you had to keep leaving gaps to let them back in. And straight to the first corner, hit a pothole. I heard a bang. I remember hearing a bang, but I thought it was either the lad in front of me or the lad behind me. So I was shouting at them, puncher, screaming at them. And then when we came to the first corner, I realized it was me and I was almost on the deck. And then after that, waited for the car off the bike. And yeah, it was like, it was so dark that as soon as the cars were gone and the motorbikes with the, you know, the actual race, and everyone in Barcelona was kicking around wanting to cross the road. So there was basically no light for me. I was having to like signal my car to get full beam on, which they didn't do for like a couple of K, which was already terrifying. And then people had just committed to cross the road. So as soon as my boys had gone, it was just like an army of people were constantly crossing the road. I must have like had to like weave around like 20 or so, like coming out of corners that already crossed. I remember just like long straight road back to the finish. It was just like an army of people in the row, and I was just like, this is mental now. This is absolutely, it's pitch black, it's raining, there's huge puddles. I just want to get there. And I was shitting myself for the time limit as well, because it's not a situation you find yourself in normally. I wasn't very comfortable with what the percentage would be, and I wasn't very comfortable with like how far I'd be off the best guys. So I was just sprinting. I was also just sprinting this whole time. I was going as fast as I could, just terrified of what was going on. And yeah, I got there in the end. And I got there when all the carnage was full show. So I just saw like an army of photographers and cameras, and my boys just like squaring up to them as well, So that was that was a pretty memorable night.
Right, okay. Top five roommates.
Top five roommates. I can do this one off the top of my head. Just in terms of a bit of a couple of different things. I've got number one, Dries Devenins. He's someone who was always a bit of a mentor, best mate, especially in the early years that we were together. I had some like quite good stints doing different rooming with him, and I just felt like learned a lot, took care of me. We had a great time, similar interests, playing music, all these things. So that was him. He's probably over the years my favorite roommate that I've had.
Okay, number two.
Number two, I've gone Phil Gill,
Oh, yes.
just because he's not only was he a bit of a hero coming to the team, but also getting to meet someone like that, spending time with him in the room, seeing what he's about, sort of the stuff that he was into, just turning up to the Vuelta with a book about trees. I remember just him scanning through trees. That was his thing for 3 weeks. Kept on reading about different trees, but just chats every night. I think I did one of my first training camps as well with him in the room as well, which was, I was just starstruck as well. I think that could have been first December Calpe camp. But he's just got so much chat, and he's just like, and he's absolutely full of it. So everything's a competition. He's always, laughing and joking, and he was just great fun as well.
Three.
I've put Michael Morcoff.
Oh, yeah.
That was another one where it was kind of like early years. I did quite a few races with him. I think I did UAE, at least my first one. And it was like the first time I'd kind of been with someone who was like, bloody hell, he's having to think about the race, isn't he? I'd arrived, you just did the race always. And then, did the race almost without thinking about it. The race was just the race. No preconceived ideas or thoughts. It was just like turn up and race. But he was, I remember how much he taught me through like really basic things, like having to ride on the front, think, like planning how we're going to control the time, what's the plan of action if they slow down in front, all these silly little things that, like, if you don't know what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing until someone like that sort of talked you through it. And I just remember thinking, like, fuck, this is the level of what, sort of thought and planning goes into sort of basic stuff. And then even seeing him as well, like navigating what was going to happen in a sprint finish, if they had a bit of a train, which other trains were going to arrive at what time, who to follow, who not to follow. And I was a bit like, fucking hell, he knows what's going to happen, sort of thing. This guy's calling it out the night before. So yeah, I was pretty in awe of the way he was working.
Okay, number four.
I've got number four and five are kind of the same. This is just two lads who I just love spending time with and just having a laugh. And that's, I've got Joseph Cherney and Maro Schmidt. Kind of like similar vibe, super laid back, super lovely lads. And also, they never took anything too seriously in all my years with them. And two of my favorite teammates as well, to be honest.
Mauro Vegas Schmidt. Still love that. Absolutely love
The pair of them have got good stories, to be fair. Maro's, yeah. That Vegas story was unbelievable, wasn't it? That was really like, but it was so Maro as well. And the whole backstory with the team was just that what I couldn't understand is like he daubed himself in as well because he uploaded the training
it on
files.
Strava, didn't he?
He put it was on, and even if it wasn't on Strava, it was on his training peaks. So the extra story to all of this is he had to do Deutschland afterwards. And whilst like in the time that he was in Vegas, the DS was calling him to make sure everything was all right, because the DS was going to pick him up coming from Italy through Swiss to Deutschland. So Maro was getting these calls at like 3 a.m. in the morning, rolling over in bed, taking the phone. And the DS is going like, all right, Maro, everything okay? It's still good to pick you up on Friday afternoon. And Maro's asleep going, yeah, I'll be all right. So the DS is just going like, are you okay, mate? What's going on? He's like, yeah, no, all okay. Just, yeah, I'm busy. Putting the phone down as fast as possible, going back to bed. And then they're driving to Deutschland, and it's just like naughty boy story where the Maro's trainer called the director in the car saying, listen, is Maro there? And the director's going, yeah, I've got him right next to me. He's going, ask Maro where he was last week. The director's going, where were you, Maro? And Maro's looking across, like already like, oh, I was in Vegas, just like he knew the game was up, sort of thing. And that was it then. But I mean, to be honest, for all the, yeah, I mean, I think it was a little bit sour in the end, but I mean, to us, it was just the best story ever.
That's absolutely top class.
Yeah,
Right.
yeah.
Top five leaders that you've raced for.
Yeah, top five leaders. Number one for me, Julian.
That's I had that one.
Yeah. Kind of hard to put why he's the best leader, but it's kind of just his style, the way, the way of working, just the like sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't go well, but anyway, we just go out there and see. And also always so thankful, always so grateful. And then just pure panache and yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Just a bit of a superstar, isn't he?
Absolutely. One of my heroes. Absolutely
Yeah,
unbelievable.
yeah, yeah.
What a guy. Right, number two.
I've put Phil again. Phil down as number two.
Cool.
Yeah.
Legend.
Kind of just because of like Julian's got a bit the same thing, but like Phil kind of had like a motivating, for me anyway, like where I was standing, Phil was kind of like the whole troops are up for it sort of thing. Like we're gonna go out and do this and that and get stuck in. So he was pretty,
I remember that stupid bloody thing I used to do on Twitter called Cycling Game, where you picked a rider and you became like their biggest fan for a year, and if they liked your tweet, you get points and stuff like that. So
that's right.
I must have tweeted him every day for a year, and I got nothing from him. Absolutely nothing. Not a reply, a like, or anything. And then once the year was out, like almost January the 1st of the next year, I tweeted something random and the bastard fucking liked it.
And the thing is, he would be smiling to himself as well. He'd be chuckling about it. He has some like, he's I don't know. He's sort of so competitive with everything that 2019 Vuelta, when obviously he was the man, wasn't he? But at the table, we were howling with him some days because just some of the stuff he came out with. There was two things we even like. Me and Tim de Klerk still occasionally speak in racing stuff. And these two things we still talk and laugh about just because every time we're going down memory lane, these two things come up. One of the ones was, it must have been like stage, I'm going to guess like 14, but it's the day that Sepp Kuss won,
Yeah.
2019. I can't remember the name of the climb. It's somewhere in Asturias, but it's pretty famous, I think, for racing around there.
That the one
And
he went from the break? Was that that day?
yeah, he won from the break. He won from the, but basically the breakaway went because we did base the same climb as the finish, but from a slightly different road in the start. And this was proper, we went up 20 minutes as hard as we could. And a strong group of like 10, 15 guys were there. Tao was in there, Sepp was in there. A bunch of really strong lives because it was, you had to be because they went so hard. And then debrief round the table was Phil telling everyone the first climb of the day was fine because it was steep ramp in the start and he just did one sprint. He did one sprint at the start of the climb and he sort of, that was it then. He just carried the speed for the rest of the climb. And everyone, of course, is incredulous because it was like 20 minutes hard effort. Everyone's doing like 20 minutes as hard as they could. And Phil was adamant, one little sprint at the start of the climb, that was it then. Just cruised to the top, basically took his position and was just there. And he just wouldn't have it that that was not happening. It's not how it worked. And then the other one is just the time trial we did in that Vuelta. First off, because I was in the room with him, he was already like yapping at me that he'd pull my pants down in this TT, that he didn't need to try and he'd beat me. It was just like a given to him what was it? It was like a 30K TT. There was no way I'd get anywhere near him. So he was already talking a big talk about this TT that didn't mean anything to him. And then anyway, we did the TT. I beat him, but that didn't matter because I did not try. I promise you, I didn't try. And he was somewhere in the results. Like, I mean, all the cyclists talk about this. You're in like the sort of, there's for sure like 30, 40 guys who always go as hard as they can. But then there's this like weird in between zone. If you finish between like 40th and 60th or 70th, depending, probably more so back then, there's probably more guys going as hard as they can now in every TT. But Phil's saying, I finished 50th, but I'm just 50th because I was the best guy who wasn't making an effort. I wasn't making an effort, and everyone ahead of me was going full gas. And I'm the first guy who didn't make any effort. I was just easy. And then Tim de Klerk's getting at him at the table, pointing and going, "You must have been trying. There's no way you beat me by how much, and you say you weren't trying." And then we were scrolling through like photography photos, and there was like some guy taking photos, kilometer 17, and Phil was like mouth closed, smiling at the camera. And he was gloating at this photo that he had, like proof that he didn't try in this TT, mouth closed, not making any effort. And he wouldn't, that was it then. He was absolutely made up that he had this like photographic evidence. Here I am, was not trying.
He's some boy. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Number three.
Remco, I've got down for number three. Again, I think pretty clear.
Yeah.
Top rider. I mean, pretty
Called you a wanker on TV.
called me a wanker on the telly. Little wanker, I think he called me on the
I
telly,
think it was, yeah.
which is pretty outrageous. I mean, that actually probably, the little probably hurts more than the wanker when you think about it. He's smaller than I am. But yeah, he's just up for it. He's just so up for it. It's always, I mean, I've been sat with like team meetings when he's saying like where he wants to attack or what you're going to do, and you're going, oh, Remco, mate, that's so ambitious. But then when you see what he has done and what he does do, just have to wind your neck in because it's unbelievable a lot of the times. And yeah, he's pulled off some pretty remarkable things that I've been a part of in the race with him. And I think the boys are always up for it with him as well because it's something special.
Four.
Four and five. Wait, am I? Oh, sorry. Four is Lander.
At
Four is Lander.
last, at last.
Yes, yes,
I
yes.
was worried.
Yes. Mick, yeah. Sorry, he hasn't had a mention, has he? Mick will get the mention, of course. Yeah.
The legend that is
He is.
Landismo.
Yeah. And he's just by far the coolest of everyone in terms of his personality on the bike, his personality off the bike. He's just doesn't get in a flap about anything. All the racing is very straightforward to him. It's always, stay calm, stay here. When we make a move, we make a move. But otherwise, yeah, save energy. And he's got a very like easy. I feel like as a probably to be honest, riding with him, I feel like I've probably been able to help him more than, any of the guys I've mentioned because there's something about his sort of style of racing that kind of lines up with mine in terms of like what he's thinking from 90% of the day, like where to save energy, how to save energy, how to maneuver through the bunch. He's never taking any risks. He's always doing it. He never upsets anyone in the bunch. It's always smooth, easy, calm.
And he's a legend.
And he's a legend. Yeah.
A mythical legend. Right, number five.
Five and six, sorry, five, I've got two people down. Because I can't really separate them in terms of like being a leader, and that is Viviani and Jakobsen.
Okay, nice, interesting.
I mean, because like I've been part of Quickstep, haven't I? And obviously, it's nothing to do with me as a bike rider. It's not like no specialty that I can do, but been part of a lot of sprint trains just by coincidence because of riding for Quickstep, and those two kind of stand out because of their like approach. And it's kind of like Ellie's this one guy I've never seen been so methodical about what he wanted, how they're going to do it. Him and Morkoff and whoever would be sort of in the train, Sabatini, Riccese, discussing absolutely everything. And then, yeah, just to be honest, been in amazement often about how things worked out and they called it and also like maximizing everything, I think. And then Jakobsen for just sort of like, just how determined he was, I think. Like he knew it was going to be hard, but he was, you could just always tell that like this guy was going to commit everything in sort of like not in that sort of like sprint away with that, like, I'm going to put it on the line for you boys. So if you do this, we do that. I'm doing my part 100%. And I think, he's pretty, I think everyone can sort of see with his whole story just how like tough mentally he is as well.
Yeah,
And that
absolutely.
goes into the whole. That whole sprinting thing is, it's a bit like somehow you've got a type of sportsman that's a bit like a weak, feeble cyclist and a heavyweight boxer all in one package, which is kind of remarkable. You've got these guys who are sort of like they have to ride grand tours 3 weeks, survive big mountains, but then they also have to be able to like butt heads and fight and potentially put the bodies on the line. So it's kind of just a remarkable. All, that goes for all of them, really. Every sprint, and that is just a remarkable blend of everything, isn't it?
Definitely. Right. Trip down memory lane over. So,
Yeah.
this year, you had the unwanted moment of knowing your contract's ending and not having a new one. How shit did that feel?
Yeah, it would have been the hardest moment of my career, I guess, obviously. I think also like knowing a bit the sport this year, sort of having been 8 years, sort of knowing what was going on with other teams and sort of like coming out of that Giro without anything and sort of just exhausted but not having anything waiting. Yeah, it was just a couple of months there were just very mentally challenging, to be honest.
Is it to the point where you're like you're checking your phone every moment, or can you relax? Can you like, what's going through your brain?
It's a bit like, I think as men, it's a bit like it's painful when you have to do it and you're thinking about it, conversations with my agent, conversations with mates, but then it's sort of like sort of day-to-day life, the first thing you do is like, I'll just that thought's just I'm gonna put it aside now. No news is no news. I can't do anything about it. You try and like crack on. But I think the difficult thing with cycling is as well, but just like motivationally as well, when you're wanting to like get out and train and you get you swing your leg over the bike and then you feel your head drop. Fuck. Why am I doing this? What am I doing it for? Where am I going next year? And then it's just those things. You know, like normally I'm out on my bike and I'm enjoying it. I enjoy training. I enjoy the sort of progression and things like this. But when when you got that in the back of your mind and you're like even turning up to races as well, like I was so unmotivated for like a Burgos this year, for example, because you just sort of like I'm going shit still. I haven't recovered from the Giro very well. I've got this looming over my head. I don't really know where it's going. Yeah, it does hang over you.
And that's the worst though, because obviously, you if you're performing well, you catch the attention of other teams.
Yeah.
So if you're riding shit
Yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that was what I found so difficult for me for this year because I kind of really did empty myself in the Giro this year. I know the result itself was never spectacular, but the way it sort of panned out for me, going clawing around trying to sort of see if I could hang about for whatever GC result, hang about for trying to get into breakaways. Big final week in terms of just what the Giro is, and just yeah, kind of just I think to be honest, the truth is that there was a bit of burnout there, just sort of all that sort of the physical exhaustion from a Grand Tour is just kind of different, to be honest. Like you're completely run down. For me anyway, my own personal experiences, I've not come out of it feeling great ever, and then sort of toss into that a whole new, like, sort of new level of like mental stress as well of thinking, you know, there's no certainty of what I'm doing. Can't seem to find a contract, got constantly got sort of not getting great news that yeah, it was a bit yeah, I think there was a bit of burnout this year in terms of those couple of months after the Giro.
And then when did the picnic stuff start to happen?
Well, I already have a good relationship with Matt Winston from, you know, weirdly, Matt used to coach my brother. It's 2025 now. It would be like honestly, it would be like 15 years ago, Matt was head of talent team in the Northwest. Johnny was a talent team under 16, I think, under 14, under 16, something like this. We're talking a long, like family connection, long, long way back. And when I did my junior worlds, Matt was the junior coach. So I already knew Matt from all the way back then. Sort of poke my head in the window, say hello during races, had bits of chat in the Giro. And Matt kind of put it on the line for me, really, because I think, you know, in terms of maybe what their thinking was for this year, I don't think I was highly on big on their radar prior to. I mean, obviously, it's been a strange transfer season, hasn't it? A lot of guys without contracts, a lot of guys asking about. And Matt, yeah. Matt sort of put his neck on the line a little bit with the team to sort of saying, get me on board. So,
You're moving
and
into
when did it
what
happen?
must be the most British and Irish team I can remember. So you've got two Scots, you've
Yeah.
got four English and an Irish.
Are you taking lads on the border as Scots? I guess you are claiming them now, are you? He's probably closer to me than he is you. Nah, he's not, is he? But
Absolutely not. Don't you start.
no. Yeah. And there's how many joining for next year? So there's me, Oliver Peace, I've forgotten the Irish lad's name that I'm joining with.
Corkery.
Corkery.
And then you've got
So what was
Hugh
that? Seven in
Onley,
total?
Port, Fjord, whoever you pronounce his name, and then Sean
Yeah.
Flynn. So we've got seven in total,
It
either
is a lot, isn't it?
British or Irish. Yeah, it's the most I've ever seen, I think, in a team.
Three directors are British as well.
So it should be a nice fit.
So
Now,
that's already, yeah.
team have already spoken about trying to move you into this kind of road captain kind of role.
Well, I'm not sure exactly road captain, but I think, you know, a bit of the thinking was that I've been around the scene. Hopefully I know what's going on, don't I? I mean, an idea of, yeah, sort of been there as a bit of an experienced guy, I guess.
Yeah, I'm trying to survive in the mountains with, whether it's an Oscar Onley or a Max Poole, both whom are super talented climbers. Obviously, what Oscar did in the Tour de France this year was unbelievable, and Poole's been really unlucky with injuries. You
I
could
think
say
Paul Mills from the rain
last
stuff
year,
helped.
his trajectory was higher than Onley's, I would say.
I would agree with that, really. I mean, to me, Paul, you know, he's for sure they're on the same level. He's got it in him. Like, even this Giro, like, he got so done over on that Strada Bianchi stage. I don't think people quite realised just how well he was going, because he lost a load of time there for nothing. And I think he even had a few days in the race a little bit under the weather. He is really world-class rider. And I think in terms of, like, he's built for a Grand Tour and stuff, I think he's made for it, to be honest.
He's a really good time trialist. Big, tall, skinny boy. Absolutely. And you're back reunited with Fabio. That'll be nice.
That will be nice.
And you're going to get what for me is one of the funniest things in cycling is when you see the winter training pictures and you're still in the Quickstep jersey and
True.
everybody's in the picnic top.
I've not been in that boat yet. I mean, yeah, 8 years ago, riding around on the Lapierre, but still in the clothing, the Quickstep clothing, and then doing team photos for a day in the picnic clothing just to get back into the Quickstep clothing. Yeah, no,
When's
excited.
sorry.
No, but just excited for it. I mean, to be honest, you know, we'll, you know, it's going to be something different, and it's weird that it's been so long without change, I guess. You know, same riders, same staff, everything. Quickstep stays pretty similar year on year, so kind of like nervous to get involved, you know, feel like a new rider again, meet everyone.
Yeah, so it's going to be like your first day of school all over again.
Exactly.
But at the
At the age, yeah, that's it.
and what? It's a 1 year contract. So, what? Well, stupid question. What do you want to get out of that new contract? But what sort of goals, what sort of targets, what do you want to do this year?
I mean, obviously, I need to speak to the team in more detail about exactly what they're expecting of me and what the sort of plan would be for race calendar. But I mean, I think one of the reasons why it's so easy for me to be excited about it is because I sort of quite clearly see that if I think I can bring something to the team, and I think I can add value if I'm there in a race with Max or Oscar. So, you know, beyond just getting a contract, I think my goals are clear: perform in those races with those guys, add value off the bike, add value on the bike, ride at my level where I feel like I can sort of survive into key moments to sort of be there for them or do something for them. And I mean, the way that the World Tour calendar is now, that I'll be in some big races next year, guaranteed, won't I? So I don't know exactly what that'll be now, but yeah, hopefully be riding at my best level there, and we'll see what comes.
Is there a, because it's a new team and a new environment, is there a period of time where you kind of stay quiet on the team bus? Or what's the story in cycling? Is it the guys come in and immediately are kind of vocal? What?
That's a good question. I would feel like normally you'd want to keep your mouth shut, wouldn't you? But weirdly, kind of feel like I need to not obviously take it too far, but I feel like if I keep my mouth shut joining Picnic, I'm not really doing, not that I'm not doing everything I'm capable of, but I feel like they'll be sort of hoping that I can be a vocal present in the race, can be a vocal present on the bus. Things like that. So there's a line to cross, isn't there, for sure? But there's also a happy medium somewhere where I'm sort of chiming in with useful tidbits, but not talking like I own the sport.
Because they're still quite a young squad. I mean, there's a lot of young, kind of early 20s guys in there, so they do need that bit of experience.
I mean, I'm fifth oldest on the team next year.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know. So that's
It's a young
bringing it
man's
home a little
game.
bit.
Because all these
And
guys
then
turned through at
thinking about it,
18.
if I rewind the clock to 2018, those lads who joined the team with me, like Morkov, Elia, they would have been about 30, I guess, when I think about it. And maybe Would Morky have been a tiny bit older? I think he might have been a tiny bit older, but they weren't afraid to say what needed to be said. Sometimes you butt heads, sometimes there's tough things to be said, but they were never afraid to, like, right from day one with the team that this was their opinion, this is what they needed to be done. And yeah, basically saying what needs to be said.
Yeah, delicate line, as you just mentioned, about trying to speak a lot of sense but not being a dick.
Basically.
Just think, what would Morkov
Yeah. What would Marky say?
done? Right, James, well, thank you very much for your time. That was really good. Really enjoyed digging back into your 8 years at Quickstep, and hopefully a good year coming up.
Yeah, thank you.
Say accumulate pace, fresh razor blade for the gate, we're moving weight to win the weight. Wise ways, precise aim. Trying to rhyme like this might lead your mind strain. The times change, flight delay, light haze. Thoughts looking like they foundation might cave. The look in my eyes resemble the ice age. The clocks of the crowd, the rent park is way park waves. Like moves on, move raw. Involuntarily eat your full paw. Feel like a painter who can't do wrong. Fallatio from lazy do fall to Paul Kane. But brought a broad brain with it all game. You snow change, you do like a solid grand, probably 10. We push it in the hallway, on guard always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Nag Daddy. Oh, yeah. I feel like. Should be fossilized in amber. Wise commander, fuck all the lies and slanders. When it come to ill niggas, you sound like the standard. Feathers and quillers, I bite the standards. Cobra, cuanto tu me cobra. Tengo dinero, pero no me sobra. You want the flake of the boulder, then I'm introducing the baking soda. Into the Yoda Palace, it's a pagoda. So blowing haze in circles in Minnesota. Buffaloes in their body, drama with disco, King Mario. Shotty blow in the hands of the Sicario. I reload the pill off without watching his body fall. Porky ass and the mighty gone. Rainbow headband, Sylvester Stallone. Skull and bone, herringbone, wishbone. Went out for the trophy and brought the shit home. Blowing loud endo. Chopped the rock to 16-bit Super Nintendo. The cream rises in a crescendo, nigga. Well, now your daddy kicking at. You know what I mean? Jump off the motherfucking cliff live out the district. Shit, my nigga. Word. Woo!